item on the agenda is approval of minutes from the February 3rd, 2020 meeting. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No? All right. Item number two is public comment. If you are here from the public, you have 2 minutes. Please state your name and address for the record. Is there anyone here to speak for public comment? Going once, going twice, and no. All right, moving on to the next item of the agenda, recognition of Engineering Excellence Award for Shem Creek Bridge.
Good afternoon. Every year for the past 30 years, South Carolina engineering firms have entered their most innovative projects and studies in the annual Engineering Excellence Awards program to honor outstanding engineering accomplishments. They accept entries in 12 different project categories, ranging from consulting services, surveying, wastewater, stormwater management, special projects, small projects, and others. Projects throughout the state are rated on a basis of uniqueness and innovative applications, future value to the engineering profession, perception by the public, social, economic, and sustainable development considerations, complexity, and successful fulfillment of client owners' needs, including schedule and budget. At the ACEC Annual Engineering Excellence Award on February 4th, Thomas and Hutton and the Town of Mount Pleasant were recognized with a 2020 Engineering Excellence Award in the Small Projects category. This is for Phase 3 of the Shem Creek Park, which resulted in our pedestrian bridge across the creek. Mr. Kevin Mitchell, our engineer in the planning department, was instrumental in working with Thomas and Hutton on this particular project. He's done all phases of the Shem Creek Park, and we'd like to thank him for gaining such recognition for our community. Thank you.
Let me get a quick photo.
Okay. Got to do the unveiling.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin, for doing the work.
Thank you.
Moving on to item number four on the agenda is a budget review for fiscal year 2021.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon. If you have your budget books, please flip to the Planning and Development Department tab. And it's around page 30, 32, in that area. I'll go ahead and mention some of the highlights. The department does have, is proposing a $252,000 increase. Much of that is the pay for performance. Some of that is class and comp. You have the mandated retirement contributions that I mentioned at the budget committee meeting in that salary and benefits line items as well. You will see some higher salary due to it being reflected in here, which is the additional short-term rental staff person that was brought on as part of that ordinance at the request of council. There are no new positions other than that. There are no new positions reflected in the department budget. Some other notable expenses exist in contractual, where we have $100,000 in new money for a zoning code rewrite. And as a matter of fact, that's probably a good place to stop. And it's sort of a more unique item than we're used to. And if Jeff would take a second to explain.
Sure. Thank you, Eric. Yeah, one of the things that we've been looking at for a number of reasons is an update of our entire zoning code and the supporting land development regulations, otherwise known as our subdivision requirements. We spend a lot of time talking about zoning, but don't think as much about LDRs, land development regulations. And for a whole host of reasons, we've been working towards an update, one of which would be following adoption of the comp plan. There are many recommendations. You'll see one later where there are recommendations to go in and revisit the code and the ordinances and the regulatory scheme in order to be able to carry out new or revised comprehensive plan policy direction. In addition, as most of you know and newer members even see already, we just have a constant flurry of requests to make changes and adjustments and refinements. And we're working off a code that's some decades old, that's been amended and edited, and oftentimes we end up with contradictory provisions and other requirements. You'll see other things, even simple things like definitions. Sometimes we get all wrapped around the axle trying to interpret and apply the code. We have started phase one, which we've divvied up this project into a couple of years, knowing it can't all be done in one fiscal year. Phase one is now underway. We have a consultant team on board doing what we call the assessment or the diagnosis. So they'd be moving through the entire ordinance looking for ways to improve understanding, readability, and recommending other substantive changes. And then this would be the second piece where we'd actually start, once their report would come out, in taking that and moving forward with it to work on a wholesale update revision of the code.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. Outside of contractual, other highlights on the CIP side, you've seen this already, you know, there are no new CIP projects for the planning department. Our comprehensive maintenance budget does include an annual allocation per council of $50,000 to make sure our facilities are meeting ADA requirements across town. An authorized $100,000 for bike and pet improvements. This is not the same as Mount Pleasant Way, but it's used to construct pathways. The latest one was at Darrell Creek to Carolina Park Elementary School was where that money was used. And we also have an annual allocation per council of $10,000 for historical commission projects like historical markers around town. Also scheduled are three Ford F-150s, replacement vehicles for our building inspectors in town. And that's based on our fleet maintenance schedule. And Madam Chair, those are the highlights. Happy to answer any questions.
All right. Are there any questions from this body? Mr. Chapman?
yes, ma'am. I'd asked this before with the budget committee, and I'll ask again if I could have the cost of adding an additional person to help with inspections throughout the community. We've gotten a lot larger. We've had one person for the entire town that does inspection of all of the issues that come through and get voted on eventually by planning, as well as planning commission, board of adjustment, things like that, and to make sure that what was voted on is maintained. So I'd just like to ask what it would cost to add somebody, and I have a general idea, but I'd like to have the numbers so that when we get to the budget committee, I can at least suggest it.
Okay, we'll get that, sir.
And from a staff perspective, is an additional zoning enforcement officer something that is our current person overwhelmed? Are we finding lots of complaints about things not being enforced because we lack staff? I guess I just want to understand before we add a staff position, is there a true need for something like that?
Go ahead.
Yes, and we can provide some of that data as well, so you can get a feel for workload and activity. A lot of what this current position does is a lot of removal of signs, illegal signs, and those kinds of things. But investigating and dealing with complaints, some of these just take a long, they're complicated. Sometimes you're tracking down owners of property. We were just working on a report, and I won't say the number, but we'll provide it as part of that. I mean, these are the ones that actually get recorded and logged where he's working on a case. There are lots of others that don't, but it's a couple hundred a year enforcement cases that we're working on at any given time. And we do get calls from folks about, mm-hmm. you know, can you move faster? You know, why is it taking so long? But I guess there's been one enforcement officer for years.
Ms. Corley?
Is it an enforcement officer situation? Do they have an assistant or somebody to handle logistics like emails and phone calls?
No, we
get somebody on the road.
Take care of those kinds of things and entering that information himself.
Yourselves?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's something, would that help? It's just to give him, just as another option, to give him or her an admin sort of?
I think it's more of boots on the ground, having somebody out that's able and available to be able to continue to enforce all of our ordinances.
Gotcha.
And as you say, we add new ones and new responsibilities, and that comes with an administrative enforcement component to those.
I just know that sometimes, you know, we get bogged down by emails and phone calls and we don't get out. And if we could split that somehow so that, anyway. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else? No? Okay. Is that all we have for item number four, Mr. DeMora?
That's correct. Okay. If you and committee are comfortable, positive recommendation to the budget committee.
All right. Do I have such a motion?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item number 5A, annexations, Lakeshore Drive.
Ms. Cannon will take these next few items.
Okay, this first annexation is at 1531 North Lakeshore Drive. 1531 North Lakeshore Drive. It's a request to annex a 0.43 acre tract of land. It is, there we go. It's not vacant. It was vacant as of this aerial, but there is now a single family residence there. And this area is actually surrounded by, as you can see, it's the purple is called Cultural Landscape Zoning District. And that whole development, it was developed in the town known as Palmetto Fort. And so this development here, as you can see in the county along here, is considered old Palmetto Fort. And a few of these parcels down here never developed. They're beginning to develop now and just have single family residences. And so they have, some have come into the town. And while it's surrounded by cultural landscape, the comprehensive plan calls for community conservation, so they'll come in with the community conservation zoning. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Do we have a motion?
I make a motion. We approve.
I'll second.
And if there's no discussion?
Oh, yes, ma'am. This area was heavily involved with the Oyster Point development. And now on both sides of it, you've got on one side Liberty Hill and the other side Oyster Point. There's some very nice homes in this neighborhood. And we're going to see a second one, the next item on the agenda. And I think it's great that they want to come in, because during the discussions of Oyster Point, it was all about, we don't want it, we don't like it, but now they've decided they want to come into the town, which is great. And these are very well appointed houses, very nice houses. And if you go out there and take a look at them, you'll see what I mean. I don't know why they were concerned, because the town did a lot to help with the Oyster Point, but I think it's great they want to come in, and I would expect most of it will eventually come into the town. And like I said, you've got Oyster Point on one side, Liberty Hill on another, so you don't have to go all over the place to provide services that's already there.
Okay. All right, let's put all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? No. Motion passes. Moving on to item 5B.
Yes, ma'am. So this next one is actually came in first, and same situation, a little bit larger lot, but they were not able to annex in because they weren't considered contiguous, and so they talked to their neighbor, the one you just saw, convinced them to come in. So now, since this one over here is coming in, this property can now annex in.
I'll move for approval. You don't have to go any further.
Second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion passes. Moving on to item number 6, review of Planning Commission recommendations, A, Washrick Street rezone request.
Okay, so this is a petition to rezone one parcel. It's a very small parcel, about 0.11 acres, from R1, low-density residential district, to R4, medium-density residential district. The property, here's an aerial, it's located off of Rifle Range and Myrick Road. This is a very small development. These properties were developed in the county. This is the comprehensive plan, which calls for medium density. And there you can see on the zoning map, most of this area is still in the county. But when they were developed according to the county standards, of course, which was more in alignment with our R4. So this lot is about a little under 5,000 square feet. And the R4 district requires a lot to be 4,000 square feet. It came in automatically zoned based on the comp plan, which was R1. And we've talked about that. Coming in as R1, it doesn't even meet the R1 standards, which requires a lot to be 10,000 square feet. And we've already had one lot over here rezoned to R4. And the property owner just wanted to, I think, add a porch or a deck on, and they weren't able to do that because they can't meet the setbacks. So that's a request before you now, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Go ahead.
I guess my question is rezoning this from R1 to R4 does not give them anything extra. It's such a small lot anyway. They would not be able to build additional things. It would just bring them into being a conforming property. Is that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The property looks like it's been recently redone or upgraded.
Mm-hmm.
What I think there might be some concern that Washrich Street or Court mm-hmm. is immediately adjacent to the recently constructed townhouses.
Mm-hmm.
What are those townhouses zoned?
I'm not sure. When are they CO'd?
The pink,
the
that section.
You asked what they were zoned.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Those are TH, townhouse district.
Mm-hmm.
So if this particular property, if somebody wanted to tie this in with those townhouses, they would have to get rezoning from R4.
Yeah, townhouse district is only, townhouses are only allowed in the TH district.
Okay.
They would have to rezone.
So they couldn't do it without coming back for rezoning.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Hyatt?
Yeah. So what does R4 allow? It has to do with the lot size.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
What else could they build? I mean, duplex or any kind of multifamily?
Single family.
Only single,
single family.
Family,
and it just has to do with the lot size.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a motion?
I'll move for approval, and then I got another question.
I second.
Okay. My question is, do the units that are already there, I mean, there are like five or six mm-hmm. houses on that small parcel of Washrich Court, do they essentially conform to R4 anyway right now, the ones that are there?
We really only looked at this one, but all of them appear to conform to the R4 district, which is the 40 foot width, yeah. And all of them will end up coming in. If they automatically zone in, they're all going to come in as R1, and then we're going to be right here before
Thank
you. Me. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Motion passes. Item 6A, moving on to item 6B, White Flat Road.
Okay, so y'all will recall this came in last year, and the request at that time was to rezone to NC, Neighborhood Commercial. Real quick, I apologize, just to get your bearings. This is White Flat Road and off of Bowman Road, and there's Chuck Dolly. So if you'll recall, last year, there was a proposal to come in and rezone this parcel right here from R1 to NC, Neighborhood Commercial. The Planning Commission unanimously recommended approval. The comp plan does recommend commercial for this entire area. And Town Council ultimately denied that request. The applicant then came in and decided to request a different zoning and include two additional parcels. So when the application first came in, it included this parcel, this one, and then the one across White Flat Road. And the request this time is to rezone to OP, Office Professional. The difference primarily between those two is the Office Professional really only allows office use, whereas a neighborhood commercial would allow restaurant and other types of more intense uses like that. So the request before you, as I said, originally included this parcel here. There was an issue with the owner. The applicant had this property under contract. They ended up withdrawing this parcel from the request because they worked something out with the current owner to stay there, keep his house there. And so before you now is just a request for these two parcels, rezone them to office professional. And as you'll recall, the last time this came before you, the use on 1242 White Flat Road, it was previously a residence. It was converted into an office use. And then as a matter of information, the parcel across the street actually is vacant except for a large sign that is for the Watermark development. That parcel was incorporated into the Watermark PD in 2009, and the PD specifically designates that parcel for that sign. It's an off-site sign. So if this rezoning were to be approved and this parcel is pulled out of the PD, that sign can stay until there's any changes to the lot, and then that sign would come out, and it wouldn't be able to be replaced as it is. So that's the request before you now. I know there was some concern regarding the fact that some improvements have been made and the use didn't go through our usual design review board process. And the applicant did get a survey done, and we have an as-built, and staff was able to look at that preliminarily. And so I just want to go through a couple of those things real quick. So this is the site plan. And obviously, there are various requirements that would need to be met because it's a commercial use. It's adjacent to townhouses and to single-family residential. So we primarily looked at the setbacks and the buffer yard specifications and then the parking. Staff's primary concern was the fact that it may not be able to meet that 20 to, for a commercial property, you have a 20 to 30 front build-to line. It would not necessarily meet the build-to line, but because there were no improvements made on the front, we believe that it would probably be grandfathered in, so it wouldn't have had to meet that 20 to 30 build-to line anyway. The buffer yard specifications, there would be an issue on White Flat Roadside and this side adjacent to the townhouses. There would either need to be a variance, or if the owner just removed these two porches, then they would likely be in compliance with those buffer yards. So then that left us with the main concern for staff was the parking. You're required one per 300 square feet. I'm not entirely sure how large this this structure is, but you're required to have parking in the rear, and obviously that wouldn't work with the required buffer. So I think what the applicant is proposing and what would perhaps work without any type of variance is the lot across the street that he's also proposing to bring in. Our ordinance allows you to have off-site parking. It has to be within 600 feet, and it's looked at as a primary use on that property. So as a primary use, a parking lot, you would also have to meet certain buffers adjacent to single family, to the street. So provided he could meet the requirements for the off-site parking, then that shouldn't be an issue. And so that is an update to the last time you heard this proposal. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Do you have any questions from
the Mr. Chapman? Madam Chairman, you mentioned commercial issues. This is office professional. Mm-hmm. As opposed to commercial. Do the buffers meet office professional mm-hmm. without taking away the porches?
Well, the buffers are based on the use and not the zoning. So what we would look at is this use against an adjacent use. And without the porches, it does not meet the buffer. If the porches were removed, it would meet the buffer. So those are the two encroachments at this point.
Go ahead.
The this is the property where they converted it from residential to commercial without going through any of the normal processes and then came into the town and sought sort of like a retroactive or to remedy it, but they just kind of came in, they just did it and almost like doing it and then ask for forgiveness later? Is that, that's the property situation that we're in?
Essentially, they, it's my understanding they pulled a permit. They were going to do an owner-builder. It became, it was going to be like a home office, and then it just sort of morphed from there and became larger than it was supposed to be. And it came to staff's attention, and here's where we are. So they're trying to make it right. And even if they get zoning approval, which they would then have to go through DRB, and they'd also have to go through our building and inspections department to make sure that everything was built to code. And so.
Ms. Hyatt, do you have any
questions about the two
comments? Oh, thank you. Ms. Hyatt, do you have questions?
I was just going to, I'm wondering about the parking across the street. I mean, how do we enforce that decades ahead, you know, how long?
So if you have off-site parking, you're required to have a covenant agreement with the town. Mm-hmm. And basically the owner of that property gives up development rights until such time parking can be met on-site. The applicant owns both properties, so I mean, I wouldn't foresee that as an issue. But it's enforced through a covenant agreement.
Okay. So mm-hmm. if he sold it, he would, okay, that would
yep.
still be enforceable.
It would be enforceable, yes,
I know
ma'am.
The neighbors have reached out. We're very concerned about the fact that the lot behind it was under contract, and they're afraid of the commercial creeping into their residential neighborhood lot by lot. So they
yeah.
have some concerns about that.
We had a lot of correspondence.
Family plot for years, decades.
Yes, ma'am. We received quite a bit of correspondence, and if I recall, pretty much all of it had to do with that third parcel. And so... But yes, ma'am. And you all should have gotten that in your packet from the Planning Commission.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that generally speaking, we are in a place right now, I think for many people on this council, where we are moving away from building more residential and encouraging more commercial development. So while I don't like how this has proceeded kind of outside the normal channels, I think permitting office professional on properties fronting Bowman is what's in the comp plan to move forward in that direction, and just to kind of like we did on the Melvitt Bennett property where they zoned the back half to be commercial, you can still keep the rest of it residential by not permitting that encroachment to happen. So that's kind of where I stand on this one. Is there any more discussion before we have a motion or?
I'm on the same page with you. I think turning residential to office, especially in that area, right? That's what it's zoned for, facing Bowman. I would agree.
Do we have?
I have another question of staff. If we were to approve this, can we approve it with stipulations about the porch and on the parking being permeable surface?
Oh.
I know. I'm just trying. I think it's a better idea than we had before.
Yeah.
And I think the building improves the area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just concerned about getting closer to compliance by the owner. I believe that the owner is here. Is that something we could ask if they were willing to do that without any forcing the issue? David?
Just can't extract.
Ask all you like, sir. It just cannot be legally conditioned.
Say again.
You can ask all you like. It just cannot be legally
good.
Conditioned.
Good. Well, I'm asking.
I'm happy to speak.
Go ahead. Please go to the podium and state your name and address for the record.
Trevor Cangelosi. I'm the owner of the property along with my partner, Jeff Ross, who's standing there. Thank you very much for your time and attention, Mr. Chapman. I believe I spoke with you briefly.
Right.
If I may just clear something up very briefly, before we purchased this property, we had an office in Mount Pleasant. We're a small law firm. And we reached out to the town because we wanted to do this right. We didn't know what the process was, given the fact there was a very nice existing house on this property, and it was zoned future commercial. If I may just hand this to you.
We don't want to see anything
I want to just see the answer to my question.
The answer to your question is yes, we are more than willing to comply with whatever the town needs in terms of bringing this property into compliance with whatever they need us to do in terms of any variations that are needed, the porches. We've been in communication with David and with Lee about whatever they need us to do, and we're sorry for the miscommunication about this, because this was absolutely never our intention. We went to the town and said, this is zone residential, but future commercial. How do we do a little bit of remodel on this house? And we maybe went beyond where we wanted to, but how do we do some remodel on this house, given the fact that you want it to be an office, you want it to be commercial, so that we can move into this property as soon as possible? And we were told that we could move into the property immediately and submit it for rezoning in any time frame. And so that's what we did. We submitted for rezoning as quickly as possible, and we communicate with the town about that process. And that's what we were trying
to start. That's good. What about permeable surface on the parking lot? Not gravel,
The entire parking lot that we own now is on the corner there that you can see on the left side, and it's entirely grass. It's currently grass. We're using it for parking currently. We're happy to do whatever the town wants in terms of making that a proper parking lot.
Well, I think you heard we can't require you. I'm asking about some type of a nice permeable surface.
Happy to.
Gravel.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We like gravel.
That's
cheaper than asphalt.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ms. Cannon.
Yeah, Mr. Chapman, they'll be required to do, I don't think gravel would be permitted.
No, I don't want
Oh,
gravel.
Okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood you.
Some type.
Yes.
Of
okay.
Maybe blocks or something like that that's permeable. We got a resilience committee meeting coming up today, so I'm looking at that.
Okay.
But again, this is not something that we can legally require of the property owner at all. We cannot. So do we have a motion on item B?
I move for approval.
I second.
All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Item number C, zoning code text amendment, impervious surface definitions.
Just who we're talking
about. Speaking of permeable and impermeable, Mr. Mitchell's got this one.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is initiated by staff. This is a change or really an adjustment to the definition of what impervious surface is, how it's defined. And I'm going to go to the next one. Basically, this is going to help with staff maintain consistency in how it's applied. It further elaborates on the building components, what is considered impervious surface, what is not considered impervious surface, when you're calculating areas for approval in the Old Village specifically. So if there's a building eaves or any type of overhang where you actually have it's not ground cover, then that would be considered a impervious area and would not be included in the impervious calculation. Also included were balconies and fence caps, but not the actual block wall surface area. So it's just a much tighter impervious surface definition that will help staff calculate, and it will also help the architects and the building designers know going in what exactly they can include and they cannot include. So this is going to be very helpful to us.
And just to clarify, this is only applicable to the Old Village historic area of town, is that correct?
No, ma'am. This is going to be town-wide. This is included in our definition of what impervious surface is.
Okay, great.
But more, it gets used more frequently in the Old Village area because they have the limitation.
Do we have a motion or any questions?
I make a move to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Item number 7, an update from Optima Tower LLC representatives regarding a proposed amendment to the Carolina Park Plan Development Ordinance.
I'm going to introduce it. Good afternoon. I have put a memo in your packet to kind of give you a little bit of history with this particular tower proposal, because it's been a while since this was entertained last by Finance Committee and town council. So the history that I have on the slides here is the same as what I have provided in your memo. This was reviewed nearly 2 years ago by the Recreation Committee and was forwarded to the Finance Committee that in 2018. Finance, excuse me, Recreation and Finance Committee tasked staff with working with Optima Tower to come up with some sort of lease agreement for the possibility of a communications tower to be located on the Carolina Park Recreation Complex property. What you see, the bullets in front of you, are what was ultimately approved by town council. So it's a 5,000 square foot lease area. You see the rental amounts. Most towers, we encourage co-location. So if they get a second tenant, there would be an increase in the amount that would be paid to the town annually. It does include up to five-year terms. We do have the ability to increase the term agreement, the rental agreement with each term. And then finally, we recognize that this may impact the parking that we already had planned on the Carolina Park recreation fields. And so Optima agreed as well that if parking was impacted, that they would be responsible for paying for what that footprint area and then any other kind of sidewalk construction that would need to occur. I was able to get, as a matter of information, a number from Lee Gasly, who's obviously been working with us on the design of the Carolina Park facility, and it appears that it would be about $140,000 in terms of dollars. Then we would lose about 41 parking spaces. We would relocate 41 parking spaces. They would not be lost. But that would be the amount that they would be responsible for paying us. The reason, actually, on that last slide, I had something that was highlighted, and I said that this lease would be subject to receiving all the approvals. Well, the next step is a zoning, rezoning, a PD amendment, because right now a communication tower is not a permitted use at the active park site, and so that would be the next step. because it has been such a long time since this has been reviewed by town council, and we obviously have some folks that were not on council at the time, it seemed appropriate that we would bring this in front of you, at least planning committee, so that you receive an update. The Optima Tower folks are here to speak further and or answer any questions that you have before they begin the process with the planning commission. So I'm unless y'all have any questions for me, there is, that shows you the location right there, by the way, highlighted, and then with an X mark, I'm actually going to turn this over to Optima Towers and let them provide you with an update as to their next steps. I believe they did submit some slides, and how do we go backwards, Jeff? But I think there were, let's go back one more. There was a technical glitch with that, so we'll just kind of leave it up with this one up here, and then I think Mr. Yates is here to speak on behalf of Optima.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Planning Committee. Jonathan Yates on behalf of Optima Towers. First and foremost, I want to thank Christine, Eric, and Marcy for working with us to get to this point. What we're planning here is a wireless facility, very well needed in the area. Anytime I come to a meeting, I do this all over the state, and what is interesting, in other parts of the state, they're saying, when are we going to get development? When are we going to get new rooftops? When are we going to get new office? The refreshing thing when you come to Mount Pleasant, you guys have a phenomenon going on that no one else in the state has right now. And I know it comes with certain price tags and inconvenience, but it's refreshing to be here. The purpose of this facility, initially done for T-Mobile, but also designed for all the other carriers in the market, is to beef up the infrastructure in Carolina Park. Quite simply, we become what they consider as the fourth utility. Wireless infrastructure has become essential throughout the United States, state of South Carolina, and the town of Mount Pleasant. So we began working a couple years ago with the town. It's a location that works very well for T-Mobile and one we want to work on. To get put in perspective, this would be somewhat similar to what we just did at Rivertown Country Club. We did the one at Rivertown, a little bit shorter. We're only need to do 120 foot pole here to provide the coverage. And there are two components to a wireless facility. You have the pole itself, where the carriers hang their antenna, and then you have where the ground equipment goes. What we did at Rivertown is we did an architecturally designed building to put all the equipment in. The typical cell tower site has a chain link fence on the bottom and the equipment side of that. We didn't deem that appropriate here. We're working with designs. Keith Powell, who's with me here today from Optima, we're out on the site again today, and we got to see the new building the town has put in, so we can emulate that architecture and come up with that some kind of design. Takes us about 60 to 90 days to construct the facility. After that, T-Mobile will only visit about 8 to 10 times a year. Facility does not create any noise, odor, lights, fumes, vibration, or glare. What it does, it just provides infrastructure, which is essential to that area and very essential to a park setting where we know that the folks using the park, their wireless will work. Why is that important? Looking at Charleston County, the 911 consolidated dispatch, on average on a monthly basis in Charleston County, 84% of 911 calls start from a wireless device. So this is the kind of setting we need to be in, and it is a perfect location for us, and we thank the town for working with us on this. I'm here for any and all questions. Keith is here for any more technical questions. But our plan is, in the Carolina Park PD, and a lot of these PDs were done, this one a little bit later, but not really thinking out wireless infrastructure. So I find myself now going throughout the state redoing a lot of PDs where we're trying to provide where infrastructure can go in to service the rest of the PD and to service the rest of that part of a particular town or county. In this case, they'd allowed for communication towers, but only in their CPI, which was their industrial district. So the amendment we'll be seeking will be very limited in scope. It will just allow for one tower to go in on what they refer to as the CPAP, or Town Park District. So that's what we're about, and if you have any questions, we're here for them.
Members of the committee, any questions? Yes, Ms. Corley.
I'm just curious, so having the airport so close has no...
Actually, well, the one of the first things we do, and I apologize, it was in my presentation. I have two of my presentations, which I'll pass out. Go to the very last page.
I always had heard that that's why we didn't have like another tower out there, was because of the airport. But
one of the first things, let me get back to my one of the things we do early on is we have a tower facility reviewed by the FAA. The FAA controls height, and in this case, the FAA made two very important findings. Number one, determination of no hazard air navigation, and also that marking and lighting would not be necessary. So we've done our federal work, we've done our state work, now we got to do a lot of city work.
Thank you.
Town work, excuse me. I meant to say town.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Ask a question. What wind load requirements do you have on this tower?
The most severe in the world. We are presently to the ANSI TIA 222G standard. Keith, and I want to say 140? OH, that's right, we've now gone to H. It's the ANSI standards puts it out for every town and county in the country. We're to the H standard. And Keith, what is that one?
Oh, okay.
About 140, 140.
It's above 120.
Yeah, typically we've seen in high wind events, Councilmember Chapman, we're the only thing left standing. The tower's there, and that becomes important. We had, particularly during hurricane season, we particularly noticed this in Katrina, where big swaths of Mississippi and Louisiana were knocked out. Towers showed their worth there. The towers, for the most part, were still there, and that's how folks communicated to the outside world.
That's why I asked the question.
Yes, sir.
All right. Do we have a motion?
You don't need one. I just wanted them to come and provide an update because it's been almost 2 years. They, if there weren't any in particular questions or concerns, then their next step is actually to submit for the Planning Commission public hearing, and they'll be back in front of you all in a couple of months. But before they started that process, I just wanted to at least have them come in and provide you with an update.
Thank you. I think in recent months we have had a lot of concerns from the community about these kinds of monopoles and the health impacts that they can have. And, you know, there was, I think one of the next items on our agenda actually has to do with potentially with one at a middle school. But looking at this, it seems to be way out in a parking lot. There's not going to be, you know, people sitting there for 8 hours a day exposed. So,
Except Oceanside. Except at Oceanside.
Where's Oceanside? Oceanside.
Hyde High School.
Oh.
Oceanside's kind of right.
Right there.
A little bit off the map there.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. Thank you. All right, moving on to the next item on the agenda, item number 8, discussion and recommendation regarding the draft comprehensive plan.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Whitley. One of the things that you requested was that staff put together just a couple of talking points based on where it seems that the council is interested in moving in terms of the plan. It really focuses everything that we see at your retreat discussions and other concerns focus on the notion of the mixed-use areas and the scale, intensity, height of buildings. And so we just lay out for you here something to get your discussion started. And what we would be able to do as a staff is go back in and make the actual revisions to reflect council direction on how you want the plan recommendations adjusted and refined. So one of the comments in terms of using the terminology of hubs, that the current town scale hubs would be more focused towards thinking and talking about them as redevelopment centers, because we spend a lot of time, like the very one that we're sitting in, looking at the potential for future redevelopment. These are not new greenfield developments. And generally, the sense is, we believe that your indications are that the hubs or centers at the neighborhood, the smallest ones, and the next level up, community scale, those seem to be okay. So that's our, we believe, is sort of where we stand on that. In terms of the mix of uses, concerns about adding additional residential to these areas, some of the discussions have leaned towards the idea of, with residential, working to limit that to affordable workforce housing and or senior age-restricted housing. And then we would need to look at, there are questions about how much of an area, a geographic area, this hub is 200 acres in size, how much could be devoted to residential as opposed to the commercial and the office that we're looking for. So we would go in and do some analysis and provide you with some percentage splits, if you will, to think about this. And then finally, the scale or intensity, these redevelopment areas, the feeling that staff gets is that we ought to be looking for a way to scale these down even further or further to be able to more closely match the middle scale, the community scale of hubs. So those are the points that we just put together for you to start discussing, and staff can rewrite, you know, however you'd like as it would move forward through the adoption process, which is our second slide when we get to the schedule. All
right. Members, do you have anything to say? Well, these points, I had a meeting with staff last week where we discussed kind of how, in talks with individual council members and in talks with us, that we are not comfortable with the town hubs, with this incredibly large scale, with this talk of high density. I know there's also a lot of concern on council about adding more residential to the town. And that's why one of the things that I suggested was, if we limit that to a specified percentage and to workforce housing, which is the needed type of housing that we have, that we need for the town, as opposed to just sort of, you know, we know when people build apartment complexes in Mount Pleasant, they're high end and they're very expensive to live in. So this would restrict it to residential. So these points up here are potential changes to the comp plan that that we worked through, and that I think would be a positive recommendation to the full council, that we make these changes as we move forward in the adoption of the comp plan. So I don't know and we're already moving towards to do a new building heights map, which would then impact the scale of these centers as it is. One of the things I want to remind the committee and the public is that the size of these hubs is dictated by what already is there. It is not some sort of arbitrary drawn line. And so the town hubs, or if we call them now redevelopment centers, those are just larger, more commercial areas of the town, and we want to keep them that way, and we want them to redevelop in a positive way for our community. So I think that you know, allowing them to have the workforce housing, and then encouraging sort of the office and commercial development that provides good tax base to the town is the way to go with this. So that's my recommendation, and I don't know how the rest of the committee feels, and if we would need a motion, how, like, procedurally wise, would we just need a recommendation from this for the edits to be made, and then maybe we can go to the next slide and see what the procedure is. Mr. DeMora.
This is off. Perhaps the sections that you wish to see amended, we could take those separately, provide alternative language. It would seem that it would be perhaps easier to see where the changes were made in the comprehensive plan. We could provide those separately right to the council level if you were willing.
Okay. All right.
And my understanding then would be that we would base those edits upon what we were just talking about, unless you have some other, you know, details that you needed us to look at. But so what we would do, just assuming we're, you know, let's talk about how we could move forward with this today, of course, is the second. And here we are, Planning Committee, we're looking at the recommended final proposed schedule. If this is to your liking, if this is something you think is workable, then what we would like for you to do perhaps is to make a recommendation to council, and then council next week could agree with said schedule. What we would then do would be to go ahead and advertise the public hearing for the 14th of April, which is the April council meeting, just in keeping with what you have previously stated that you wanted to have, you know, be moving on this and make some progress, have the public hearing in April. There we are. What we could then do would be to schedule some working meetings with council during that time frame that we've got up here, the 17th to the 31st, kind of the latter half of March, to review the sections that we're talking about changing, so that, you know, we give us some time to redline the document, make the changes that you want to see, get it before you so that you would be able to have a chance to look at it, so we could discuss it at a special meeting to make sure we've got it right, what you want to see. Whether we think we can do that in one meeting or multiple meetings, we may have to find out as we go forward. But then schedule-wise, we could at least plan to come back here on the 6th of April to make sure that we're on the right track, you know, follow up on any conversations that we have had at that special council meeting, then be prepared for public hearing and first reading on the amended document at the council meeting on the 14th of April. Following that, you know, you will at that public hearing, you'll hear public comment, and you may hear something that makes you say, oh, wait a minute, we need to do something else, you know, here, there, or somewhere else in the plan. So there would be an opportunity following the public hearing and between first and second reading of the document for us to look at making some additional, you know, hopefully minor changes at that point based on that public hearing input, so that you could be ready, hopefully, for second reading at the May council meeting. If not, we, you know, if we need a little more time, we can bump it out to June, but kind of keeping on that same sort of schedule. And just wanted to see if that's something that seems workable and appropriate to you.
So would it be, it's possible to advertise the public hearing given the current draft of the comp plan and then make changes afterwards? That's permissible?
I think what we can do is to advertise the public hearing, yes, and that it would be the, probably the way we would word it would be something along the lines of the plan, the version that was recommended by the Planning Commission with amendments.
And then we would be making those amendments in,
yes,
the special meetings in March.
Yes.
Okay. I like it.
Sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds really good.
Do we need a motion to that effect? No. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. That's super clear.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Is there anything further on the comp plan? Did anyone have other items for it? No? Okay. All right. Moving on. Discussion of existing and proposed green development practices.
At the last committee meeting, Ms. Hyatt asked if we could run through and give a feel for
what the town does today in terms of addressing and dealing with open space, stormwater, tree preservation, and those kinds of things. So Mr. Mitchell's going to, as he's involved heavily in the land development process, he's going to run through what we do today, and then Liz can come back, and there are some recommendations in the comp plan for moving further ahead in this particular direction. So take it away.
Good evening. The first item I have is the development process. Town Council, of course, owns property, and there's two governing bodies that are the Commercial Design Review Board as well as the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission handles the subdivision of residential properties, and the Design Review Board handles the commercial ends of it. Commercial boards, DRB, that's the they have purview over buffer trees and stormwater facilities, parking, traffic connections, and as well as the architectural material. That is all handled under our Design Review Board. Residential Development Planning Commission, they handle the streets, lot layout, stormwater management, trees, and open space, just to give you all a clear understanding of the purview of each one of those boards. The green infrastructure really does, and how we interact with the environment, does cover a lot of ground, and it really does pertain to a lot more than what you see on this first slide. But what I did, I just included the bulk of where our regulations, where you can find our regulations that do impact the environment the most. Starting with Chapter 156, our zoning code, it of course regulates density, land use types, and of it has buffers and impervious surface limitations, which is also the building lot coverage, and tree protection. We'll get into those topics in just a moment. But the next chapter is Chapter 155, our land development regulations. This is how do you go about subdividing property. This directly relates to the water quantity. How are you going to manage the additional water to prevent flooding? And it also folds right into watershed planning. This is an area where we will be doing some improvements in the very near future by creating a little bit more of a town-controlled program. Also, it has a green space preservation. This used to be our open space. This was recently updated, and we'll discuss that in just a moment as well. In our LDRs, we do have standards for infrastructure, and that also relates to our environment because it does regulate the types of materials, the construction means and methods, and as it relates to roads and drainage system. Chapter 153 is our water quality chapter. It is adopted in place to make sure that the town adheres to our state water quality regulations. Hillary Repick is the program manager in the Public Service Department. She has a number of inspectors that ensure from the very beginning of a land development project to the very end, inspections do occur routinely. They ensure the quality control is on site and throughout the process. Also, they are in charge of the post-construction enforcement, which is the long-term maintenance responsibility. That's an extremely important component of in protecting the environment, because if you install these devices, you do want to make sure that the owner is obligated to maintain them regularly. So that is a very important piece of the water quality. Also, good housekeeping, what we do internally, it is part of our six minimum control measures to meet our state standards. Good housekeeping involves having an effective illicit discharge ordinance. It also has mapping that's included. We have to locate and identify where our points of discharge, and also have records of doing dry weather screening and routine inspections. Also, the public outreach too is part of our good housekeeping requirements. Chapter 152 is our building flood damage prevention ordinance. This is where our FEMA regulations, where you can find those. Our building inspectors also, they follow the construction of building practices, and they do conduct quality control when they are on site. They do have the ultimate permitting authority. They issue building permits and also release the certificate of occupancies. Contained in the same chapter is our special stormwater management area that was recently adopted over a year ago in the Old Village area. This addresses the cumulative expansion of single-family homes, of impervious surface for single-family homes. Each resident has to be accountable and responsible for their increase in runoff. As a result of this adoption, we did create a builder's guide to help property owners navigate those more strict regulations. So in a nutshell, this is the bulk of our regulations as it relates to the environment. Keep in mind that it doesn't really taint, because it's such a broad topic, that it doesn't really have everything that we do in here. But this is the bulk of how we manage and protect the environment through land development regulations. Speaking on that topic, our newly created design review team, this is how we internally collaborate with other departments, because it truly does cross over multiple agencies, including Mount Pleasant Water Works and Dominion Energy. This is something new that we're doing at the town. It's being the program manager is Rob Rogerson with our building inspections department. We have just started having regular frequent meetings, and we've had some positive results in how we collaborate, making sure our regulations do not go in conflict, and we have a good line of communication with the development community. So the end result would be a better set of plans. Now, moving into the tree buffer and green space preservation, we have two categories when it comes to protecting trees, residential subdivisions and commercial developments. Residential has a different standard. Anything greater than 16 inches, a DBH, is protected and mitigated. A plan is provided that shows shows where trees are located, and of course an arborist follows up and does an assessment of each one of those trees. In commercial development, they do the same thing, but it goes down to 8 inches DBH. But at the very end, all developments have a minimum of 160 inches per developable acres on site. The table provided here shows the percentages of a replacement, and of course it's based upon a class system where there are trees labeled, and depending on the condition of those trees and then whether it's residential or commercial, this is the percentage of replacement that is required for the developer if he were allowed to move forward with removing trees. This is an example of a sketch plan that would be under the purview of our Planning Commission. It's color-coded. This is shows the relationship or the location of trees in relationship to proposed lots and roadways. Again, that does go to the Planning Commission for their approval. Moving on to buffer yards, this is a proposed buffer yard. This is our for commercial development and other different types of development. It's based on proposed land use and what's adjacent to the existing land use. For instance, if you're proposing townhouses, and you're abutted up against single-family homes, you would have a C-type buffer that would be required. Now, under the C-type buffer, there's built-in flexibility for the developer. If they so choose to have a wider buffer, then they have less intense plants. A smaller buffer has more intense plants, and so on. So there's different variations of our buffer yards. This is a typical site plan that goes before our design review board. As you see, the perimeter is heavily landscaped and trees because of the buffer yard. We also require canopy trees along parking lot bays. This provides a well-needed shading effect on the parking lot, which does actually help in the middle of the sun. I mean, in the middle of the summer. To help cool the surface and also prevents thermal pollution. The special buffers that we have, those are our natural roadside buffers and our OCRM critical line buffers. Our natural roadside buffers are located on most of our town corridors. They do provide a service not only from an aesthetic viewpoint, but they do provide an air quality component. They also have a stormwater benefit as well as wildlife habitat. Now, our critical line buffer is, I believe, one of the strongest environmental regulations that the town has. It does provide two really nice benefits, and that is it allows the filtration of surface flow of water from rooftops, driveways, and backyards before it actually reaches the critical area. It also provides a separation between the disturbed area because during construction and clearing, there's a lot of airborne dust, and that dust has to go through a barrier, which does protect the marsh from sediment. That actual ordinance has been updated recently from a 35-foot average to a 50-foot average. Now, our green space located, this is found in our land development regulations. It has a threshold of 5 acres. If you're developing 5 acres and subdividing, then you have to have a 25-foot natural and undisturbed buffer along the collector road. And if those lots are less than 10,000 square feet, then you have to set aside 30% of that developable land. Or if it's over 10,000 square feet per lot, then you have to set aside 20% of the developable land and preserve it for green space. Moving on to our stormwater management, three of the most popular devices used are your wet ponds, which have a permanent pool, and our dry ponds, which have no water within 72 hours. And the third option is our underground detention that is mainly seen on commercial property. That is not an actual requirement to have that on commercial property, but it is chosen by the developer at that time. Wet ponds, if designed correctly, they look very natural, but the primary function is flood control. The available storage volume is calculated from the water surface elevation to the very top of the pond. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual depth of the pond when it comes to actual maintaining flood control. It does serve a water quality purpose. As water enters these ponds, then it allows the sediment to settle to the bottom. There's actually an 80% trapping efficiency that is required for each pond that's based upon the surface area in relationship to the contributing basin. It serves as an important wildlife habitat and also a neighborhood amenity. Now, the dry ponds, those also serve as flood control devices, calculated exactly the same from the very bottom to the top. That's your available storage volume that's needed before a storm event. The water quality it provides an important water quality function by allowing high level groundwater recharge, and also the liability, of course, is much preferred than a wet pond. Device that is popularly used is the underground detention that, as I said, is usually seen on commercial property. It does have flood control. There's also an important water quality component to it. As you see in the picture, there are these orange chambers. They are bottomless. They sit on a rock bed, so as runoff enters these chambers, it actually goes into the void space of the rocks, where it exfiltrates into the underlying soil. That provides a very high level groundwater recharge. And of course, one of the most popular benefits of this is you can cover it up and then use that as your parking lot. So it makes a very efficient use of land. So that is, that as it relates to the bulk of our regulations, that's how a lot of our environmental impacts and as it relates to land development.
And Ms. Boyles has a couple slides just on recommendations for the future, and then we're all here for questions.
Oh, goodness, thank you. So the various components of our development
process and I guess our land use that Kevin's just been talking about are all ways that we have over the years tried to begin to address some of our green concerns. There's always new and different ideas that could be taken into account. So with our comprehensive plan that we have been talking about lately, we have several sections in that plan that address different components of what you might consider greener development sorts of questions. So we defined what we called our green network, which was basically any sort of open land. Now, we have, of course, there's a little bit of a difference between a park and a marsh and a ball field, obviously. But these might be areas where you could see easier use of some of these green techniques as opposed to, necessarily within a parking lot. So we kind of saw this as some low-hanging fruit that we could take this and build upon it with additional lands or rules or regulations, that sort of thing. So the recommendations that went along with the Green Network included some ideas such as incorporating green infrastructure into these public spaces. So for instance, Mr. Chapman, as you were saying earlier about the idea of pervious parking, perhaps to go along with a park as opposed to just paving it, because that would be a step in that better direction. And to try to coordinate some of these, we identified the land so that we could see maybe where there were areas where we could try to link, one standalone green area with another one. So that if you don't know where it is, it's going to be harder to do. Recommendations about requiring site-sensitive design because some, if you've got wetland areas, for instance, or particularly large, beautiful oak trees, maybe you can work your site plan around protecting those as opposed to not. And then again, as Mr. Mitchell mentioned just a minute ago, with our natural roadside buffers, and of course our same applies to our critical line buffers, but those areas can serve multiple functions. He was talking specifically about the water quality benefits, which is huge, especially for the critical line buffer, but if you have a roadside buffer that's more natural and larger, then perhaps that could function more as a linear park or for wildlife movement through the area, those sorts of things. So looking at trying to encourage those opportunities. So we talked about the land, and then we also talked about the water resources within the comp plan. This was a section that was added kind of late in the plan because we realized we hadn't fully addressed everything. We had things here and there. We wanted to make sure we brought it all together into kind of a cohesive conversation about how we handle water in the town. There are kind of two sections to this water network. There's a section that deals with the drainage and the flooding, like, the volume of water that comes off and making sure that it doesn't get into somebody's house or standing on the road, that sort of thing. So we dealt with the drainage, and then we also dealt with the water qualities. They obviously go hand in hand, but they're different components and different issues to be dealt with both of those. So we looked at, we made recommendations about trying to improve water quality through some use of some more green infrastructure sorts of principles that we can perhaps look at our codes and see if there are ways that we can better incorporate some principles that to encourage more of this providing for better water quality. Obviously, we also looked at sea level rise as an issue that we all are well aware we need to address, and looking at correcting existing flooding and water quality problems as opposed to we've got existing ones we have to look at, and of course, obviously, preventing future ones. And this kind of segues into the idea of hazard mitigation. If we don't address our stormwater issues, then that's going to more greatly impact our functionality following, say, we have another large storm and we have flooding issues. How can these two work together? So if we deal appropriately with the stormwater up front that will help us in our hazard mitigation efforts down the road. But so there were also recommendations about trying to marry those two ideas together and see how we can better positioned in the future to deal with the hazards that are inevitably going to come one day. So, and that's kind of in a nutshell, the highlights anyway of what we have in the comp plan to deal with green infrastructure.
Thank you very much.
There you have it.
Ms. Hyatt, did you have anything to say? I know this item was initially placed on the agenda by you, so I wanted to give you the opportunity if you had.
Well, I just wanted to learn what we could do with the comp plan, really, moving forward. I knew we were doing a lot of things, but I think the public perception is that we're not doing enough. When they see something that's completely clear-cut, they get upset and outraged. So I just wanted to know what ideas we had moving forward because we were working on the comp plan. Mm-hmm. If there was something that we could do more of. I do wonder, I know we've always required this mitigation when the trees come out, but what's required, it's on site, and are we really following up with that? I mean, how do we keep up with that?
Yes, part of the review of any development proposal, the staff reviews. I mean, you receive part of the sheets that are within a submittal are a tree assessment, and they identify how, you know, they apply, the engineer consultant applies our ordinance, says, you know, there are X thousand inches of trees, mm-hmm. and we need to replace and mitigate, and so they have to come up with a mechanism to be able to do that. We do have the ability with a tree bank, in some instances where the replacement tree mitigation can't occur on site. Sometimes you don't even necessarily want to replant or plant in an area because you might be able to do it, but the area wouldn't necessarily survive. You're putting too many plants in a small space. So they could meet the ordinance, but it wouldn't be useful in the long term. And there is the ability then to pay into our tree bank, and the town can use those funds for tree mitigate or tree plantings on public properties, town properties.
Right. Okay. Then we follow up behind them.
I
understand it on the front end. They show what they're going to do, but then it's like what's on the back end that's actually done.
I'll get complaints from property owners because our people doing their job and in accordance with council and the ordinances are making sure that those particular species, caliper, you name it, is planted. And they'll say, well, you know, we couldn't quite get that number, so we, you know, had a number of a different species or something. No, we check up, we follow up, and sometimes we have to hold up a project if it's not done.
Yeah, I was going to add to that. We actually have it built in so that we're able to hold a certificate of occupancy to ensure that the right plantings occur.
And we're sure we're doing as much as we can. I mean, as far as the mitigation, we don't have room mm-hmm. for more. We'd all like to see more green space.
Yeah. Per ordinance. I mean, that would be at that point.
I mean,
if you'd like to see more.
If there's room for more,
it would be a council policy decision. Yep.
Mr. Chapman?
Ms. Hyatt, having served on the Planning Commission, Eddie Bernard, who's right behind Mr. DeMura, is one person.
Yeah, that's what I know. That's why I'm saying.
Now, you might want to do what I suggested in another committee, to add a person, or actually in this committee, to help Mr. Bernard.
Mm-hmm.
I would second if you want to do that, because Mr. Bernard has a tough job to do all over.
Yeah.
But he does it well. But he's one person.
That's right.
So if you think we need to do a better job, maybe you want to make that proposal as part of the budget.
Well, okay. Was there anything further, Ms. Corley? No. All right. Moving on to the next item of the agenda.
Thanks.
Item number 10, Moultrie Middle School rezoning. Was there an update from the school district?
We staff followed back up with the school district and had not received a response. So it's been two meetings. And so at this point, if council is interested, remember, Moultrie Middle is zoned AB, area-wide business, allows commercial activities, and it also allows for telecommunications towers under that district. The public institutional one does not. One of the suggestions at prior meeting was could the town or the property owner rezone the property to preclude that particular use? They could. Council can initiate a rezoning, and the staff would launch that and move it through the process that you're familiar with to public hearing with Planning Commission and then back to council if you so desire to move that way.
Well, I think we've given the school district ample opportunity to respond to our query. I think at this point, I'm comfortable moving forward with this. Is there a motion from the committee, or should I can make the motion? I move that we recommend to full council the rezoning of Moultrie Middle School from AB to PI1.
Second.
All right, is there any discussion?
Yes, ma'am. What does this do to our market, our farmers market on that same property, if you can't have commercial on it?
The double.
I wouldn't consider it a commercial, sir. I think it's just a partnership that we have between the district and us. And in fact, while the district chose not to comment, I think the PI zoning allows for greater partnership and flexibility between the district and the town than what would be restricted by an AB use.
So even though you don't allow commercial, if I go into PI, it doesn't affect our farmers market.
We'll double check that for sure.
Please do.
We'll have that for you for next week.
That was my concern, that we don't do anything to force our own farmers market out of there.
Okay. As public institutional zoning, then that's the definition of what the PI public institutional is. So I didn't bring our use table list, but we'll double check that.
Thank you.
All right, let's go ahead and vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed? Motion passes. Item number 11, discussion and possible action regarding the removal of Chuck Dolly Boulevard Overlay District. And Ms. Hyatt, you asked that this be placed on the agenda, so I'll let you.
Okay. I know we've addressed the urban corridors and other areas, but it hasn't been addressed here. So I wondered what properties would be affected by this. I know we have some issues on Ben Sawyer. And with the comprehensive plan, can we just take care of it then, or should we do it now? I know we're going to move maybe in the direction of hubs rather than these linear urban areas. So I had questions about that.
We did put together some information in terms of background. This is the urban corridor overlay before the last set of changes. And so you see on Ben Sawyer, the overlay moving all the way down to the marsh. The geographic extent of the overlays and the name became the Boulevard Overlay District, and the overlay was pulled back to Rifle Range Road. But the other provisions and requirements are still there. The idea to look at all of these came up over the past couple of years in response and reaction to concerns. Staff presented through Planning Committee and to Council some options and alternatives. You know, leave it alone, modify it now, meaning then, and then wait and review it through the plan and then modify, because this is an ordinance and a set of regulations. The comp plan can give us the direction that says we need to be changing and doing something in this area, but the actual regulatory tool is your zoning ordinance. So, in fact, council chose a different option, 2A, and said make some changes now in the interim. We knew that's what we were doing, and then we would look at the whole concept through the comp plan update. And those changes, again, were related to Ben Sawyer portion of the overlay. There was a concern about the maintaining sort of a gateway character. What you're dealing with today, elimination of single-family residential on commercially zoned properties that were covered by the overlay. So that's the Sullivan's Point example, name changes and other changes that we had to make. And in the plan, this was the direction. Maybe it doesn't come across in the plan as strong as it could, but the idea for nodes or hubs or centers springs from the notion of, is there an alternate way to have commercial and office development in the town of Mount Pleasant, where we don't stretch it out and cover as much geographic area, could you kind of slide and move it to these focal points? And so the plan recommends a complete rewrite, even suggesting elimination of that overlay as an alternative. And so the zoning code update is a short-term action, and it's what we talked about just a little while ago in terms of the budget and a zoning code update. This is something key that would be a big ticket item that we would be looking at working on through an ordinance rewrite. We have tons of ideas on how to make changes and fixes. It's just the concerted effort of being able to pull that all together and start working on it. And that's what we've got for you in terms of existing situation.
To Ms. Hyatt's question, if we were to potentially remove the Chuck Dolly Boulevard overlay, what properties would be impacted? What properties would then become an issue, kind of like Sullivan's Point became an issue when we removed that from the overlay?
We haven't done that kind of analysis. That's something we would want to look at, and we could give you that information. It's what we did when we looked at that stretch, if you recall, Ms. Whitley, trying to identify existing uses, implications for that. But we would have to go back in and take a look at that corridor. Really, the Chuck Dolly corridor within the overlay is a scaled-down version of everything anyway. Heights are lower, allowed uses are less intense. If you wanted to proceed or as we moved forward, those are the kinds of things we look at to be able to give you recommendations on what to do with that particular segment of the overlay.
And Mr. Elma, as you pointed out, the comp plan, the talk of removing some of the overlay or adjusting it to sliding it to be more into the hubs, is the ultimate goal with the hubs to eliminate this linear overlay district entirely and move to the hubs, or would we be leaving the linear districts in place and adding hubs?
I think it would be a combination of both. I mean, with the existing pattern and character of development, these linear commercial stretches are going to be around for a while, but the idea would be sort of a shift share and be able to move some of that pressure rather than having a new office development or office building occur within the main stretch. Could that be then, say, in this community scale hub here at this location, that's where you would want to encourage more of the development rather than strung out along the roadways. This is the kind of thing, this kind of project would, this is here from years of plans and ordinances and changes. So we'd need to do a justice to analyzing it all and coming back with some recommendation on how best to deal with it. Part of the difficulty is that the fact that it's an overlay and it confuses people on how it works. My zoning's commercial, but I could do this if this happens or that happens. One of the goals is simplicity in future ordinance provisions. There may be another way to do it completely and make it more understandable, mm-hmm. Have it identify the kind of places that you're interested in having in this sort of loop or oval, and then we can write anything.
So the correction is done with rewriting the ordinance or with the comp plan?
The comp plan just sets that direction.
And then we'll have to rewrite.
And then, I mean, as an ordinance, that's a law, and that's another step.
And right now, the heights on that, is it just 40 feet on Chuck Dolly right now?
I think so, yes. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chapman, Ms. Corley, again?
No, ma'am. I'm just waiting to get moving with comprehensive plan.
All right.
Second the motion.
This looks like another one of the things we need to do with it.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything else to come before this committee? If not, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Turn down the air conditioner.
I'm freezing every time I come in here.